You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
call and leave a recording to transcribe. Get some people. Where do you wanna be? Where you wanna be? What your life is. What's with your life? Running like a rare disease. Running like a rare disease. Get some people. Stop giving up yourself. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything goes well for you today. We're going to have a good weekend. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it isn't and it has to get done, it must be done. It will get done because you will do it. That's right. No procrastination. I mean, if you can't do it, you can't do it. But if it's possible for you to do it and you must do it, you'll get it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world, if you can, you know, if you're wherever you are. Because this, I'm on the internet, you know, so wherever you are, whatever time around the world. Right here, it's 11 a.m. Well, it's 11:12. So, check us out. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Just got distracted. Yes, this is African Perspectives, and I'm going to have a good program today. We'll talk about some good stuff. Yeah. So, oh, there it is. Okay. African Perspectives, we got program Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and all times again give our Eastern times. Thursday, yesterday, from 8 to 10, was the Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement with Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. This evening at 8 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. And then on Sunday, at once again at 7 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah, we're not going to do, like I said, we're only going to do announcements once a week or maybe something like that. So give more time to talk about issues and stuff like that. So I'm going to go ahead on into the Yasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And we can get this party started. Yeah. September 5th, in the millennium, the most important issue will still be the question of culture. It says race, you know, and I know in the history of many people said the question of the color line and issue of race, particularly because of Europeans who devised and came up with the idea of race. And who dominate the question. Not surprisingly, technology will provide European, Caucasian,
extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy, were greater weapons of destruction for the minds of the non-white populations throughout the world. The basic implication for Africans is that we do not have a history of any real significance to the rest of the world. We are, in effect, a non-essential factor in the forward advance of civilization. Thus, in a time of crises or surplus, African people are likely to be expendable and disposable commodity based on our lack of contributions to mankind. That's sad. And not really true. But it's true as far as the world is concerned. Because the world has been made to believe that we have never done nothing. We never created anything. We've been walking around and running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose waiting for Europeans or anybody else to come along and civilize us. Man. Indus Kush. We are the dandelions of this reality, victims of an imperialist science which must destroy truth in order to become its owners. We went from value to devalued, again, valued, though without acknowledgement. The measurement of our value in this world followed the rise of the defining voice of the spawn of Caucasians. With the classification system of Urugu's political science, we were once hunted and uprooted as weeds, our seeds tossed to the wind. Now they have come to recognize what our ancestors long ago knew so well, the higher value of everything about our biology and spirit. And in historically typical fashion, Urugu seeks to steal it for themselves alone. Consequently, we are harvested as cures for a sick and deficient people who need to kill everything in order to live and rise as the world's survivors and rise as the world's saviors. Even though they are loathed to admit the falsity of their claims to discovering us, the needy arrogance of their cultural assembly demands that their science remake anew as original to their knowledge what we have known since long before fire warmed a horrible cage, the caves of these people, the horrid of their caves. Affirm, I am neither expendable nor disposable because I know our potential and what we have accomplished. Affirm, I am neither expendable nor disposable because I know our potential and what we have accomplished. And unfortunately, family, I hate to say the vast majority of our people on the planet don't understand that, don't recognize that. The whitewashing, hundreds of years of European dominance and whitewashing has caused us to believe them. Got more good stuff out of the Inyasasim of daily revolutionary thought. September 6th. We must encourage our own African authors who have character, who are loyal to their culture, who feel proud to be African, and every way let them feel that we appreciate their efforts to advance our culture through healthy and decent literature. The Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. Unexplained chaos is imbalancing to one's mind and spirit. It creates intellectual and emotional voids which fear eagerly enters and fills. Fear. False evidence appearing real. Brother Kwaku. It gives reason to worry, for chaos creates victims without sane options or a means to security. And once you set your mind to worry, it does. It corrupts every good thought. It gets in between the paper and the pen, the fingers and the keys. So frontline writers should never waste their time worried about the insinuations of those who self-centeredly believe that every critique you make is a personal insult against them. Some people need to be mad. It is in their very breath. Envy, anger, and self-justified, self righteousness fill the void left from our loss. It helps hide the hopelessness that the realization of just how devastating what continues to be done to us has ravished our families, our communities, our nation, and how truly it is. They are hopeless. Their insecurities cannot become your concern. Your job is to reveal self-evident contradictions within a reawakening vision of African sovereignty. It is to bring clarity to those seeking to find a sane human way. It is to elevate our warriors' thinking above the doubt. For a writer committed to thinking for us moves most creatively among the words that move minds beyond frontline skirmishes and into the victory of Ma'at. Affirm, I read and support those African authors who hold themselves accountable to us. Affirm, I read and support African authors who hold themselves accountable to us. Ashe, ashe, ashe. Oh. September 7th. Unlike her counterpart in ancient Near East and classical Greek and Roman, the women in Africa occupied a position of equality and respect. She inherited as well and sold property, signed legal documents, and played a very important part in the daily lives of the state. In addition to these powers, the natural line of inheritance was through the woman. In Africa, the woman, after marriage, retains all her individuality. Her name does not change. She continues to bear the name of her family, Ife, Ifa. Our traditional egalitarian gender roles are the reason why most African women still want African men to assume primary responsibility for these areas in which they are naturally and have been socialized to be more skilled. Yet, African women are not delusional. They know this place is not traditional Africa. They know this place does not reflect a true, divinely sanctioned social order. But that does not take away from the yearning for the way of those traditions. So in spite of existing in a racist and sexist cultural chaos, they remain staunchly womanist. Womanist. Given the violent, highly competitive relationship between European sexes, historically feminism is a logical reaction. Hate is naturally there. Womanism, on the other hand, or womanism, is the only untainted African possibility. As thusly defined, womanists seek balance with men. They require mutual respect and shared power between men and women. As womanists, African women want a united front with their man. They still desire family and community, minus Urugu's misogynistic way. Affirm, I respect the identity of women, have demanded and asserted throughout history. Affirm, I respect the identity of African women and have demanded and asserted throughout our history. Ashe, ashe, African women. Brothers, we can't do without them. That's why, you know, I played a replay of Brother Umar Ifantunde. Brother Umar Ifantunde, and talking with many years ago with No Neck Roland Martin on his show, and he had the three panelists on his show, and they all jumped up at Umar, and Umar just fired back at him, especially on the role of, you know, because I think one of the dudes was married to a white woman. He's a Republican. And this one sister defending the right to marry, you know. And there's one brother there. Yeah. He understood. He understood that it's important for black men and black women to come together to have black families or African families. He said correctly. He understood that African men and African women come together to have African children and African family, whether it's here or anywhere else in the diaspora or on the continent. I'll say this, man. With this election coming up, this is gonna be some serious stuff, family. You know, it's gonna be interesting. Tuesday is gonna really be interesting with the debate. Number one, how Kamala handles herself, and how she handles him. I believe the mics once again will be muted so he can't interrupt. You know, I wish they had ability to fact check, you know, in real time, because he's a lying son of a. Even in the debate that they felt he won, but he didn't really. It's just that Biden, you know, just lost his way, you know, his mind. I mean, hey. It happens. It happens to us as we get older. Even I'm quite sure they're taking all kinds. They're probably taking the best memorization stuff that they could take, and still it happens. You know, because you're getting older, and that's me. That's us who are elders, who are in them 70s and 80s. You know, one of my friends, Brother Muhammad Abdullah, who has been on this program many times, I marvel at his memory. I really do. We're talking, and you remember, I mean, he's talking about people from the 60s. I'm serious, man. You know, when we went to school back in high school, you know. Yeah. Yeah, Muhammad Abdullah. But also to my friend Jim Winbush. He has some good recall. But it's important to, you know, feed your mind. It's important to feed your mind. And one of the ways to feed your mind is to read. And what do you read? Or, you know, or listen. You know, now you don't have to read. You can listen. You can listen to a whole book. You know, you can listen to Blueprint for Black Power. By Dr. Amos Wilson, you can. And if you know that book, you know how thick that book is. Yes, sir. But whatever way, family, that you can require knowledge of self and begin to have the thinking and the heart and the courage to be who we are and stand on that. Like I said, you know what this program is about. That's why, you know, when I come on here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm coming with the idea that we must embrace independence, self-determination, liberation, sovereignty for African people. Sovereignty. Nobody tells us what to do. We don't look to nobody outside of us. We do for ourselves. We have sovereignty. We have sovereignty over our land, over our resources. We become players in the world instead of the pawns that these folks have made us. The motto of this program, Pan-Africanism or perish. Either we embrace Pan-Africanism and we assist Africa and Africans, we assist them in developing a strong Pan-African, because us in the diaspora, we need to come home. Us in the diaspora who has particular skills, who can teach, who have particular skills, who can work in labor, and all the things that we can do on the continent to have a balance of nature and technology. Because we want the beautiful animals and many of the scenes and but we also need the farming, the building of the cities or the towns, the highways, the rail systems, the seaports. All of these things need to be done. When Europeans came in, they didn't come in to elevate us. They indoctrinated us. They didn't come to educate us, to support. No. It was a dumbing down. And to take our resources. But then the 60s happened. And African countries started to get independence. But no, it turned out to be what, family? Exactly. Neo-colonialism. With blackface up in the front, doing the bidding for Europeans, doing the bidding for Urugu, as they continued. I want us to, you know, understand the dynamics. You know, it bothered me tremendously. A number of years ago, I think it was 2015, 16, when France had that shooting at one of their theaters or something to that effect. I don't remember the details of that. I just remember what happened and how on Facebook all these brothers and sisters were feeling sorry for France and having the colors painted over their pit, all this kind of madness. And I said, do you know who these son of a bitches are? Do you know these are the colonizers still, in effect, ripping off Africa? And if it wasn't for Africa, they'd be a shithole country. And so, we need to look at Africa. I'm going to play this particular piece. I played this from the jump. And I got a piece that I heard, White Boy Privilege. You might have heard it because I didn't know that it was old. You know, I'm going to play it today. White Boy Privilege after the break. So we'll have some discussion on that. But I'm going to play. You know, even though I mentioned that there was a takeover by some Muslim, African Muslim, or Muslim Africans group in Burkina Faso, but I want to say that what this brother has done is the model and what we need to do. You know, so check this out, and we'll have some discussion on it.
Burkina Faso's 36-year-old president, Ibrahim Traoré, who is not only the youngest president in Africa, but also the youngest in the world, continues to astonish corrupt African leaders with his transformative leadership and dedication to his country. In a continent where many leaders often act more like tourists, shuttling from one international summit to another, frequently summoned by developed nations to beg for aid and loans, Ibrahim Traoré is charting a new course. Since assuming power less than 2 years ago, he has spearheaded the completion of numerous mega projects in Burkina Faso without relying on Western aid or loans, setting a bold example of self-reliance and national pride. In a recent and unexpected move, reminiscent of the actions of Libya's former leader, Muammar Gaddafi, Ibrahim Traoré has once again made waves by taking back control of Burkina Faso's natural resources from foreign hands. The government has reclaimed its gold mines from a British company, which was previously the largest mining operator in Africa. But Traoré's actions did not stop there. In a decisive step towards economic independence, he immediately nationalized these mines. This mirrors Gaddafi's early tenure when he nationalized Libya's oil wealth, redirecting the profits away from Western corporations and back into the hands of the Libyan people, dramatically improving the country's standard of living. Traoré's vision for Burkina Faso is clear. Gradually reclaim all the country's natural resources from the grip of foreign, often exploitative, corporations, and nationalize them for the benefit of the Burkinabe people. This approach aims to break free from the neo-colonial strangleholds that have long kept many African nations in a cycle of dependency and poverty. By ensuring that the wealth generated within Burkina Faso stays within its borders, Traoré is laying the foundation for a transformation from a third world country to a thriving, self-sufficient nation. His actions are not just a challenge to the corrupt leadership within Africa, but also a direct defiance of the Western powers that have historically sought to control the continent's resources for their own gain. This is a bold, strategic path to economic liberation and national sovereignty. It demonstrates that African nations can thrive independently, overturning the long-standing narrative of dependency on foreign aid and loans. By investing in his nation's resources and prioritizing the welfare of his people, Traoré is setting a powerful precedent for other African leaders. His approach could serve as a blueprint for how developing nations can achieve true independence and prosperity, challenging the status quo and reshaping Africa's future on its own terms. You see, after World War II, Libya was divided between France and the United Kingdom, with the UK maneuvering to establish a monarchy under the Senussi dynasty, a move sanctioned by the United Nations. Despite the label of independence in 1951, Libya's sovereignty was superficial at best. King Idris and his regime operated largely as puppets of the British government. The British exploited Libya's resources with ruthless efficiency, effectively reducing the monarchy to a mere extension of the British crown, much like what occurred in Burkina Faso. This reality, often unknown or overlooked, meant that all significant government decisions required the blessing of the British monarchy before implementation. The Libyan monarchy was, in essence, a corrupt and complicit regime, an extension of British colonial interests, rather than a true representative of Libyan people. The British oversight ensured that Libya's wealth was siphoned off to serve colonial interests, leaving the Libyan populace in dire straits. Life expectancy plummeted, and the nation's educational system was in shambles. Only 250,000 of Libya's 4 million people were literate, as noted by Mason. Poverty was rampant, and the quality of life for ordinary Libyans was abysmal, with the nation languishing at the bottom of development indices. This dire situation persisted until 1969, when Muammar Gaddafi overthrew the Senussi monarchy in a coup that sought to reclaim Libya's sovereignty and wealth from foreign hands. Gaddafi dismantled the monarchy, which he deemed a relic of colonial subjugation, and swiftly moved to nationalize Libya's oil industry, targeting Western oil companies like British Petroleum. The creation of the National Oil Corporation, NOC, allowed Libya to finally take control of its oil revenues, channeling wealth back into the country instead of letting colonial powers divert it for their own gains. This nationalization was a radical shift. It meant Libya could directly benefit from its natural resources, using them to improve the lives of its citizens rather than funding the infrastructure and luxuries of Europe. Under Gaddafi's leadership, Libya underwent a remarkable transformation. By 2011, the nation had evolved from one of the poorest in the world in 1969 to a regional economic leader. The United Nations Development Program, UNDP, in 2010 classified Libya as a high development country within the Middle East and North Africa. Literacy rates soared from single digits to an impressive 88.4%, and life expectancy increased to 74.5 years. Libya's dramatic rise serves as a testament to what can be achieved when an African nation asserts control over its resources and rejects the exploitative practices of colonial powers. It is a powerful example of the potential that lies in demanding what is rightfully theirs, rather than passively accepting the scraps dictated by self-serving, parasitic colonial corporations. A prime example of resource sovereignty can be seen in the actions of Niger, which made a bold move by raising the price of uranium from a meager 0.8 euros per kilogram to an impressive 200 euros per kilogram. This drastic price increase was not just a simple market adjustment. It was a powerful statement of reclaiming control over the nation's resources. Remarkably, just days after this decision, Niger was projected to become the fastest growing economy in Africa, a title it holds today. This rapid economic growth highlights the impact of nations taking charge of their own wealth. It's astounding to consider that previous regimes in Niger had signed contracts allowing for just a 5% royalty on uranium sales, a shockingly low figure that underscores the extent of exploitation by foreign interests. This aligns with claims made by the late Wagner PMC's head, Yevgeny Prigozhin, who once noted in a video that while French companies sold uranium at 200 euros per kilogram, they were returning only 11 euros to Niger. The discrepancy is staggering. 200 euros versus 0.80 euros is not just a pricing adjustment. It's a revelation of the exploitation and undervaluation that has plagued resource-rich African nations for decades. However, when this reality is presented, some Africans dismiss it, proclaiming, "The West is not our problem, we are our own problem." While internal corruption and complicity are undoubtedly issues, it's crucial to recognize the broader systemic exploitation driven by Western corporations. Many African leaders are pressured into signing agreements that effectively extend colonial exploitation by granting these corporations the right of first refusal on any newly discovered resources. This means that even today, foreign entities continue to dominate mining, drilling, and tapping into Africa's wealth, with profits flowing back to Europe, leaving only scraps for the host nations. These arrangements are not mere speculation. They are documented and entrenched in contracts that perpetuate economic dominance. It's disheartening that despite clear evidence, many remain unaware or unwilling to confront these facts. Meanwhile, nations like Burkina Faso, despite their smaller size and fewer resources, are taking a stand and asserting their sovereignty with courage and determination. In contrast, larger nations, often touted as regional powerhouses, remain hesitant, caught in a web of fear and indecision, unable to shake off the vestiges of neocolonial control. The call to action is clear. Africans must educate themselves and others about these exploitative practices, challenge the status quo, and demand fair terms that truly benefit their countries. It is time to wake up, unite, and reclaim the wealth that rightfully belongs to the people of Africa. To enhance comprehension of my message, I would like to share a video from Julius Malema.
I want to make sure that we open our economy for all to participate, we industrialize, we beneficiate in South Africa. And that's why you were saying, where will the money come from to do all of this? We've got so many minerals lined up on the freeways to Richards Bay, getting out of this country. You must know that the day you take out chrome, put it in a truck and take it to Richards Bay, as it goes passing all places into Richards Bay, those are jobs that are going to be created in a particular country through beneficiation. So we need to beneficiate here in South Africa. We need to industrialize here in South Africa. We need to reopen all the factories that were created by Bantustan governments in Seshewu, in everywhere else. There are factories that have collapsed. Why do you open those factories? Those factories must produce the things that we use every day. Why should we wait for a plate to come from China? People use plate every day. We wait for toothpick. We wait for matchsticks. We don't produce matchsticks. All of this, we don't produce television.
But why?
Because this government has gone into trade agreements with other countries. Let's take Germany, for instance. Our trade agreements with Germany says we cannot manufacture a car. We will assemble the cars from Germany. And we don't just assemble. We put money to assemble German cars. Why should we do that? Why should we not produce, manufacture our own car? Where's the market? Africa loves everything South African. They will buy from us. We produce a fighter jet. A fighter jet. If we can produce a flying machine, shouldn't be difficult to produce a car. The Netherlands demonstrated.
In any case, I would appreciate your thoughts regarding the video. Please consider subscribing, liking, and sharing the video. And feel free to provide your feedback in the comment section below. Your input will be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Outstanding. Outstanding, family. Thank you, Brother Ralph. Brother Ralph sent me that. Even though I read that, even though I read that piece last week about the coup attempt, And I'm not sure when this particular piece was done, but I'm quite sure he is going forward. Brother Ibrahim is going forward in Burkina Faso and the other countries, and let that be an example. In fact, many of the other countries should, you know, coalesce with him. You know, because the reality is this, family. Africa has all it needs. You know, when I sign off, you know, I talk about the African mind. And that's what I just mentioned. That we have all that we need except our minds. But the African also has the M-I-N-E, the mind, under our feet. All the resources. If you would look, if you want to go online and look at Pangaea, the continent that was supposed to be one huge landmass, and everything through tectonic plates and shifts, earthquakes underneath the water, land and so forth, these over millions of years, family, breaking away, establishing North America, South America, you know, parts of Asia and Australia. When you can put these things together, it fits around Africa. Why does Africa have all the resources? It was the beginning. It was the middle of that continent, that mass continent. And everything began to break away from it. Some of the countries or continents that broke away, some of the continents that broke away maintained some riches or even created some riches over millennial times because of the environment. But Africa stayed rich with everything that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they shown the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. And that has to change. That has to change. So, family, it is incumbent upon us to do our due diligence and to read and to listen and embrace our African selves. It is our only salvation. It ain't no damn Christianity. Jesus ain't coming back. Jesus, if he ever even was here. I don't give a damn what the religions say. Because this is not about religion. If you got your spirituality, that's beautiful. Religions are cults. I don't give a damn about no religion. What I care about is African people existing when we have a evil entity in our midst who's hell bent on dominating and controlling everything. You know, I was listening at a presentation, not listening, I was present with Mama Marimba and Mama Frances Cress Welsing, and they both did outstanding presentations as always. But the one piece that Frances Cress said in her presentation that stuck with me was that she was in her kitchen and her work with Neely Fuller on the, you know, the question of color and so forth, you know. And, of course, her book, The Isis Papers, The Keys to the Colors. And what she said, it came to her that when Europeans came out of that dark age, that ice age, you know, no, not the ice age, excuse me, when Europeans came out of the medieval times, because this is their second development, came out of those medieval times, those dark ages, and said, we made war amongst ourselves, and because they are very warlike people, these are the most violent people on the planet, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. And that's what they did. They begin to go around the world, claiming everybody's stuff in the name of, taking their stuff. wherever they came, they didn't come in peace. They didn't come to barter. They didn't come to trade. They came, they found out what you have, and then they put in the mechanism to take. And then when they raped the women, they seen the offspring didn't look like them. And what Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said, it caused an innate fear in Urugu, an innate fear of genetic annihilation, and said, we must control. They're the smallest group of people on the planet, but yet dominate in resources, in area and population on the planet. Just as that piece I just played to you, we have every right, Africans in the diaspora, particularly the Africans here in this country, who are some of the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet, to come together to rule our continent, to kick everybody's ass out and begin to do for ourselves. And everybody's ass, I mean, if you were neocolonialist and you're sticking with that and you're not going to come to the table to discuss how we can work with each other to change the dynamic, if you're one who want to stick with these superficial ass boundaries that Europeans carved up at the Berlin Conference, without saying, no, we're going to drop all of this. We're going to be as one. No, then you got to go. You got to go. Go to Europe, because you're doing the benefit of Europe. Go there. France, England. Go there. Go to the United States. Get your ass out of Africa. Because there's one thing that has to happen, family. Africans need to be in control of Africa. Real Africans. Africans who have an understanding of who we are historically, who we are culturally, and are willing to do any and everything to make those things a serious possibility for us and our future. I don't give a damn what happens with Urugu. They deserve whatever they get. But hey, if you want something, you pay fair market value price for it. If you can't, sorry. We have to, family. Let me get a call here. Let me get my brother Irv. Good morning, Irv.
Good morning, Baba Oshie.
How you doing?
I'm sitting here listening to you, Baba. You get on fire. But, you know, I don't know what other people think, but I know what I think. When I hear you speak like this, it not only lights the fire in me that's already burning. You can't light something that's already burning, but it keeps it going. I'm
that's
telling
right.
you, Baba.
That's right.
You,
keep that fire burning. Said, keep that fire burning for justice, brother.
Keep
for
that
sure.
fire burning.
Yep.
When you said religion is a cult, I heard a lady yesterday said, why don't y'all, she got on the internet, and she said, why don't y'all stop saying you're giving money to God? You're giving money to the pastor.
Yeah.
You gave the money to him. You didn't give it to God.
No.
And then the Pope comes, another guy comes on and says, Jesus ain't coming back. The Pope actually said that. The Pope said that Jesus is not coming back.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, that bothered me because I've been indoctrinated my whole life to believe that Jesus Christ is coming back. You know, Al Green made a song. He's coming back like he said he would.
Right.
So I believe that. Mm-hmm. And it did bother me. But in my consciousness, I understand the game that's being run with the organized religion.
Right.
So it didn't bother me until I couldn't function. But it did make me think people are starting to realize that they're being led around by the nose.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dying. They're dying with that hook in their nose. I listened to a brother the other day really quickly. I got two books coming. One's called the Transfer Agreement, which is about before World War II, when the when the Jews boycotted Germany, and then they came up with all this BS, and then World War II happened. And another book, it's called The 13th Tribe.
Mm, yes.
Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
The synopsis of this book is about the Ashkenazi.
Ashkenazi.
Jews, yeah.
Exactly. Ashkenazi
and
Jews.
It shows how they don't connect back to the Hebrews.
No, we've been saying that the people who are there today, the people who dominate and control Judaism today, are the Ashkenazi, the European Jews who have no connection, who have no right mm-hmm. at all to the land of Palestine. In fact, they don't take DNA tests because they know that their DNA does not come back to that land mass that they've stolen. That they murdered, wow. And they continue to do so, you know.
Wow. Now they said this says that they converted to Judaism in the 8th century, mm-hmm. migrated westward,
yes,
to the current Eastern Europe, which is now Ukraine, Poland, mm-hmm. Belgrade, Lithuania, Hungary, and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting to me, Baba Oshii. But this is what I really quickly, and I'm gonna stop and let someone else get on. But what I was listening to the other day was a brother speak on how the United States, until they deal with their biggest sin, which is slavery, they're never ever going to be able to get out of the hole that they're in. Because what happens is the operating system that they're using in this country worked fine 30 years ago. 40 years ago, as soon as 20 years ago. But now, Baba Oshii, it is broke. It doesn't work anymore. In other words, you can't update the system. Now you have to go to brute force.
Mm.
Before, we could send in jackals. We could send in the CIA. We could send in, see, with the internet, would put things in real time. Now you just have to go in and take what you want. Because that whole diplomat and all that spy stuff going on, I can see the spy on my computer now. and that's why what they're doing is that we're seeing it. So you can't tell me it's raining when you're right. controlling it.
Right.
So now they're in a place now where, and you know, when white people get upset, they start fighting. Mm-hmm. They start killing. They'll kill each other.
Yes.
They'll kill each other.
Yes.
And so now they're trying to figure out what we're going to do. You got every time you look at a school shooting, which I think is tragic, mm-hmm. you're looking at little white boys shooting other children.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the white kids shooting children, shooting each other? Because the system is broken. It's been broken for a long time. And Baba Oshii, if we don't stop living in this state of complete hypocrisy, because there is no Santa Claus. There is no Easter Bunny. But you're going to buy those Easter clothes. You're going to buy that Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, yeah, it's coming up.
Why are you, as an American African, buying a Thanksgiving dinner?
Yes.
What are you celebrating?
Yes.
What exactly? Do you question anything? Do you question anyone? I question you, Baba. And I know that you speak the truth. But I question.
Yes.
You don't question.
I question everything.
People.
You question
right.
everything. You're supposed to.
Everyone,
especially
everything.
Them.
No,
especially them, because they're the purveyors of lies. They're manipulators. They're underminers. They have shaped and fashioned the world in their image and in their interest, and that is a very sad situation for those who are outside of that. They're the only ones who have actually enacted genocide. True. I mean, I know I did a piece on genocide this past Wednesday, and we come up with various other notions and so forth, but my contention still is that genocide is when a group has been literally exterminated, wiped out, and that's what they have done. That's what they have done.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're absolutely correct, because when you look at the businesses that American Africans own, the one business that white people don't want American Africans to own, it's not a car dealership. It's not a supermarket.
Right.
It's a media company. They cannot own a media company as an American African. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is you start saying, what do you think?
Well,
and if you are conscious, you go directly against everything that white people believe in, i.e. the Easter Bunny, i.e. The resurrection, i.e. somebody going to come save me. Somebody is coming to save us. Ain't nobody coming.
Well, you know, Byron, mm-hmm. Allen has bought some media entities, but Byron mm-hmm. Allen has always been safe. He's married a Caucasian. Yeah. Byron Allen is always, but he has collaborated and brought together some individuals with deep pockets, and so he has bought some and owns. I think he even owns the Weather Channel. But my point is, is that I agree with you. If somebody gets a television and is mm-hmm. conscious and is pumping out information and is exposing Caucasians and is talking about things and the dramatizations, everything is geared towards that. That's why this program, Brother Irv, mm-hmm. is what it is. Because mm-hmm. I could talk about sports. I could talk about all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the bottom line to this program is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. The model of the program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or mm-hmm. die. That is the bottom line every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. That's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Everything else is moot. Now, if we're talking about something in the contemporary society, we're talking about it in the vein of, you know, how it affects African people. Everything right. is how it affects us as a people. Everything. So mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Just like me playing Ibrahim in Burkina Faso and what he's doing, the yeah. great job that he is doing, and Lord protect yeah. the man. And I would hope that more African countries would come together, more African yeah. leadership would come together yeah. and begin to take their stuff back, begin to tell uh-huh. them, no, we're not giving you no more gold in South Africa. No,
no.
You ain't getting nothing.
No.
You know,
no more gold,
no more
uranium, no more cocoa beans. We're not giving you anything.
That's right.
Baba Osho, he's absolutely correct. And we have to understand that when you go against a Urubu like this, the United States, France, Belgium, Germany, they're upset.
Oh, yeah.
Because he just upset the apple cart.
Yeah.
But Ibrahim and those three kings there have just upset the apple cart. And now when the others see the freedom that they have, to say what they want, to move the way they want, they're going to want that type of freedom. I'm telling you, Baba Osho.
Oh, no doubt. But the only thing about it, though, the only thing about it, Brother Irv, is that there's that hint of doubt because why? The Europeans manipulate, particularly African yeah. leaders and leadership. You know, yeah. to me, there should have been no damn way they should have had a attempted coup in Burkina Faso with that man in charge. They should have jumped on board with him and mm-hmm. find how we could solidify mm-hmm. this and make it best for us as a people. The bottom line to what mm-hmm. Muammar Gaddafi did, and I know that Brother Ralph had some issues, right. and I know there's some issues with Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah.
But one of the things you must admit, and he's part of that piece I just played, was because that was the example that they used. You know, the mm-hmm. fact of what he did for his people, for the people in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they try to make it seem that Muammar Gaddafi and his guys were squandering all of the oil wealth and were dictators and did this, that, and the other. Because why? They wanted the West and the world to hate Muammar Gaddafi so they could do right. what? So they can exterminate him. They can eliminate him. And look at Libya today, it's a damn mess.
That's right.
It was a great place, even though the majority of the country of Libya is desert, but that part of Tripoli and all those areas that they made for the people of Libya, when you got married, you got a home and a car. I mean, everything. The people loved Muammar Gaddafi. But they made it seem to you, if you just listened to the West and you watched TV or read the book, whatever, you mm-hmm. thought this man was a tyrant. You thought this man was mm-hmm. evil. You know?
And it's Baba, the same thing Baba they taught me to try to do. Yeah.
It's the same playbook, Baba Oshi.
Yes,
the only way that the Rugu was able to enslave the African in this country mm-hmm. was to make the African into a savage.
Yeah.
They had to make you into a non-human being, three-fifths of a man or some fool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They couldn't punish you if you were on the level that they were on. Mm-hmm. When they had slaves, the slaves could actually rise to the level of his master.
Right.
But in this country, you can't do that.
Oh, no.
Once you become a slave, you're a slave, your children are slaves, you're a slave until you die, and you're not a human being. Because, Baba Oshi, it's easy to kill something that's not human. Because
you had no humanity.
To kill something.
Because you had no humanity. In fact,
that's correct.
In fact, there was a part of, I don't know if you've ever seen this, and for the listening audience, Brother Future. Mm-hmm. It's one of the pieces I used to show to the young people I worked with back in Milwaukee in the school system, Brother Future. And it's about this young brother out of Detroit who's got a hustle, you know. And he's running away from the cops because they're kind of blowing his hustle. Mm-hmm. And he gets hit by a car. He's transposed mm-hmm. back to 1822 South Carolina. Denmark Vesey.
Wow.
Denmark Vesey.
Okay.
You know, Denmark and Moses Gunn, great actor, great brother. He's in the field picking cotton, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to the brother says to him, look at these hands. Are these the hands of a slave? Moses Gunn says, yeah, they black. Yeah, they black. They're the hands of a slave because that's how it happened. At one time when there were indentured servants and there were free Africans, but then this country said no free Africans, no Africans. Right. Everybody who is African, who is melanated, you are designated as a slave. You are under the rule of servitude. Until, of course, abolitionists came in and that thing began to change. But let me take a break, man, so we come back from the break. And we're going to play some other good stuff. Irv, I appreciate you, brother.
Oh, you know, I love you, man.
You too, dear brother. You too.
I'm listening.
All right, family. Yeah. We're going to play a little something for you. You're listening to African Perspectives. Here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and Black Talk Radio Network.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. Let me make sure I get that queued up for us, right? All right.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland. Excuse me, family. Here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah, wake me when it's over. David Sanborn, Bob James. You know, sometimes I battle with myself about, you know, playing Caucasians on the program, you know, but it's music, you know. And but it's just like if you knew, like I remember hearing about actors who were openly prejudiced, like John Wayne, Glenn Ford, you know. And now people debate me on the Elvis Presley piece, you know, because I saw the piece in the news in a tabloid when I was a kid, when I was, you know, I was in grade school, it's the 60s, and said, only thing a nigga can do for me is shine my shoes and buy my records. Now, okay, everybody said that he didn't say that, that didn't happen, and he was benevolent. He gave a maid a Cadillac. You know, did he ever say, I sampled this, I got this from black people, I got this, because he didn't write shit. He never wrote nothing. Big Mama Thornton's Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog, and so many others that he appropriated. So that's my contention on that. Anyway, I tell you, but I want to play this particular piece and let's talk about this, and it's I never seen it, but apparently it's old. Yeah, it is old. I think 2019, maybe, something like that. It says here 2016. White boy privilege. White boy privilege. And let me see. By Royce Mann. White boy privilege.
Dear women, I'm sorry. Dear black people, I'm sorry. Dear Asian Americans, dear Native Americans, dear immigrants who come here seeking a better life, I'm sorry. Dear everyone who isn't a middle or upper class white boy, I'm sorry. I have started life at the top of a ladder while you were born on the first rung. I say now that I would change places with you in an instant, but if given the opportunity, would I? Probably not. Because to be honest, being privileged is awesome. I'm not saying that you and me on different rungs of the ladder is how I want it to stay. I'm not saying that any part of me has for a moment even liked it that way. I'm just saying that I fucking love being privileged and I'm not ready to give that away. I love it because I can say fucking and not one of you is attributing that to the fact that everyone with my skin color has a dirty mouth. I love it because I don't have to spend an hour every morning putting on makeup to meet other people's standards. I love it because I can worry about what kind of food is on my plate instead of whether or not there will be food on my plate. I love it because when I see a police officer, I see someone who's on my side. To be honest, I'm scared of what it would be like if I wasn't on the top rung, if the tables were turned and I didn't have my white boy privilege safety blanket to protect me. If I lived a life lit by what I lack, not what I have. If I lived a life in which when I failed, the world would say, told you so. If I lived the life that you live. When I was born, I had a success story already written for me. You were given a pen and no paper. I've always felt that that's unfair, but I've never dared to speak up because I've been too scared. Well, now I realize that there's enough blankie to be shared. Everyone should have the privileges that I have. In fact, they should be rights instead. Everyone's story should be written, so all they have to do is get it read. Enough said. No, not enough said. It is embarrassing that we still live in a world in which we judge another person's character by the size of their paycheck, the color of their skin, or the type of chromosomes they have. It is embarrassing that we tell our kids that it is not their personality, but instead those same chromosomes that get to dictate what color clothes they wear and how short they must cut their hair. But most of all, it is embarrassing that we deny this, that we claim to live in an equal country and an equal world. We say that women can vote. Well, guess what? They can run a country, own a company, and throw a nasty curveball as well. We just don't give them the chance to. I know it wasn't us eighth grade white boys who created this system, but we profit from it every day. We don't notice these privileges, though, because they don't come in the form of things we gain, but rather the lack of injustices that we endure. Because of my gender, I can watch any sport on TV and feel like that could be me one day. Because of my race, I can eat at a fancy restaurant without the wait staff expecting me to steal the silverware. Thanks to my parents' salary, I go to a school that brings my dreams closer instead of pushing them away. Dear white boys, I'm not sorry. I don't care if you think the feminists are taking over the world or the Black Lives Matter movement has gotten a little too strong, because that's bullshit. I get that change can be scary, but equality shouldn't be. Hey, white boys, it's time to act like a woman, to be strong and make a difference. It's time to let go of that fear. It's time to take that ladder and turn it into a bridge.
Well, it ain't happening, and it ain't gonna happen. No truer words were spoken than you heard right there, you know. And even though they recognize that what should happen for us to live on this planet in relative peace and so forth is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. The fact of the matter is, they have made a determination. As I said, they made that determination way back in their medieval or dark ages, when Martel and Charlemagne and all the others. That's why I don't like that brother call himself Charlemagne the God. Don't you know who Charlemagne is? God. See, you know, you got to do some research about shit that you, words that you say, and labels that you use or names that you give. You know, please. But anyway, they made a determination that whoever's going to run the world is going to be them. And they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of all those European countries. You know? These European countries, they're rich. They're rich because of wealth stolen. Wealth stolen. Look what Belgium has done. Look at all the other European countries. I just told you about France, which still has many so-called, quote, colonies, particularly in the western part of Africa, and who get money. If you don't remember, the Haitian Revolution of 1804, how proud they were for that moment, only to the effect of the United States, Britain, and Spain coming down on them. Because, no, we can't have. And it was at the time of Thomas Jefferson, and I can't stand his ass. I can't stand none of them. But he said, we must do something about this and never let this happen. So he was a man who wanted Caucasian supremacy to reign. They all do. They all do. The young boy who's on this video I just played for you, he's saying, we do. I'm sorry. I love my privilege. I love the fact that I can do things, you know. But should it be where we have some equality? You know, should it be? No. That's one thing I think the European realized, or Caucasians realized, particularly as they were coming up. And, you know, from the time coming out of the caves to the development of Greece, development of Rome, the fall of all of that to the medieval times, and the rise out of that of the times of exploration and imperialism and taking people's stuff, you know. We call it Australia today, but the people who lived there, you know, who the Europeans came, the British particularly, came and just took all of it. Like I said, they never come to barter and trade, you know, discuss things about. No. They wanted it all. They wanted to shape it and fashion that in their image and in their interest. You either were eliminated or subjugated. You weren't running nothing. This country. Great documentary you need to check out. Exterminate All the Brutes. Exterminate All the Brutes. Yeah. Raoul Peck, brother who was from Haiti. Yeah. So, phone lines are open. 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Let me catch this caller here. Good afternoon, caller.
Hey, what's up, OC?
Hey, what's up, Jay? How are you doing?
I'm good. Listen, let me ask you, did you speak earlier about that shooting
in Atlanta?
Where you at, in Georgia?
No. Mm-mm. No.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to go off topic. I thought that I heard say something about it, but right quick, you know, they arrested the father.
Right.
They charged him
with murder,
with the same crime,
right,
that they charged the son, which I think is a beautiful thing. I think that should be the direction that they should treat these animals with.
Well, the bottom line is, if you know that your son, and you have allowed your son or daughter, whoever, to have a firearm, and particularly assault rifle, you know, and then there was a case where he had said sometime a year ago, he's only 14, so some year ago,
right,
that he talked about, you know, some mass murder or something to that effect, but he was, you know, I guess he's seen a therapist or whatever, I don't know, but the bottom line, it lay dormant until this particular time.
Well, I just would like to figure out if they're going to charge him as an adult or a juvenile,
yeah,
based on his age, but he's definitely a psychopath in my analysis. People like him should be put down, man, just like a rabid dog, man, because there's no rehabilitation of that type of psychopath.
Well,
you know, just based upon what he did. I don't see it, but you know.
Well, what they think, because you know, with Jay, you know what they think is the fact that the human mind does not come into full maturity until you are 23, 4, 5, something in that effect. See, he's only 14. And so what will probably happen, that he'll be imprisoned with possibility of parole when he's 30, 40 years old, you know.
I haven't been institutionalized at that time. Oshie, I can't relate to that, because I went to school with the infamous Willie Bosket of New York that changed the whole juvenile laws in New York. We grew up together. And the thing is, he's a psychopath today that he was back then when he committed that crime. So the thing is, I believe that they don't change at all. I don't see any change. I mean, because now that he's in the situation that he's in, he's probably going to become a white supremacist based on the simple fact that he's going to have to be in that environment to keep himself from being abused because, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
There's no redemption on someone like that because his behavior is going to become more barbaric because of the environment that he's in. And from what I heard, that the prison system in Georgia is extremely brutal. And, you know, I just think a person like that, honestly, should be put down because if he did that in certain places in the world, they'd just behead him. If he did that in India, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, something like that, they would just cut his head off. But, you know, they don't have these type of problems in those
countries. Yeah, because they know they know they get your damn head cut off.
There you go.
It's a real deterrent. It's a real deterrent.
So sometimes you have to behave in the same manner as the psychopath. That's the reason why black people have never been able to totally flourish the way that we should against our pressure, because of the honest fact of the matter is it's our humanity. That's what the truth of the matter is. Our humanity. Hold on 1 second, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, bro. Oh, I'll call you right back.
Okay, Jay.
I'll call you right back.
Baba Ocean.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to break in. I somewhat disagree with Brother Jay.
Okay.
And the fact that we should, when you start talking about putting people down, and you're talking about an undeveloped mind being put down, you sound just like Urugu to me. You sound like Urugu. Because what happens is, what do you expect to come from Jim Crow when Jim Crow has babies? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What did you actually think was going to come from the mindset of an oppressor? Than an oppressed child, a child who becomes an oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about a people with a history of brutality, Baba Osha. You talk about it all the time on this show, how they've killed and conquered and raped and pillaged and taken, and then they have a child, and you expect this child to be what? To be somebody who loves everybody and don't want to see nobody? He's going to be just like his parent. We're not. Baba Oshi, when I grew up, I played with white children. I was taught this racism. I was taught this classism. I was taught these things. This wasn't innately in me, and it still isn't. I fight those things. So when you start talking about putting people down like they're dogs, and because white people are bragging that we're going to try him like an adult. We're going to try him like an adult.
Right.
So I'm supposed to clap for that. Supposed to clap because you're going to kill a child who was taught to be ignorant because he had an ignorant parent, because the parent was ignorant because they live in an ignorant country, whose ancestors. I mean, you sitting here telling me don't listen to R. Kelly because he has a sickness and he's a pervert, but I'm sitting here listening to the Star Spangled Banner who said kill all these American Africans over here slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So stop it. You got me telling Bill Cosby's terrible, but I got to worship the fathers of our country. You're talking about Thomas Jefferson, who was a pedophile. Are we talking about that? Are those women coming to take him to court? You know, the ones he molested 200 years ago. So, Baba Oshi, no. We have to not imitate or emulate the oppressor, because then we find ourselves in league with the oppressor.
Yep.
A shame-based alliance.
I say.
Stay with me, brother.
That's right. A shame-based alliance.
We find ourselves there. We're not that person. We're not those people. We don't come from that. And our ancestors have sacrificed to keep our humanity. down. I mean, you can't just think about this. Grandma, I'm going to stop quick. I know other people want to speak. We came over here as a people in the belly of a ship, and we're still here. So we're going to lower ourselves to, we're just going to put them down like a dog. No, we're not. Mm-hmm. We're not those people. That's not us. That's not us. We don't come from that. We come from great kings and queens and rulers and dynasties, and we don't come from that. But we're not perfect. We're not perfect. We're nowhere near what Arugu is. But Arugu is the mind, and that's real. So anyway,
you see that manifested with what you see in the world today. So you're right. You're right. All right, let me get a couple calls in here.
Go ahead. Right. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Good afternoon or good evening.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning for wherever you are on the planet. Uprising to you, Bubba Ochi, and let me just say this to my brother Irv. Ignorance, or what I should say is intelligence, rules the world while ignorance carries the burden. Mm-hmm. And the reality of it is, unfortunately, that put many of us into the dumb zone. We tend to play very ignorant. We just ignore the facts. And for the sake of this argument, the facts ain't something you can argue with. 2 + 2, you can't argue with. It's an exact science. Mm-hmm. Baba Ochi, did you get that piece I sent you on Tommy Robinson?
Yes. Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, like I said in the beginning, right? You know, when the people were rioting and running up and down the streets, I didn't really pay much attention to it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. I didn't do no research on it. It didn't really interest me as such. And I tell you why. Because I think once you know, you absolutely know. I think when you know, you don't tend to try and convince yourself like something different is happening. You know what's happening. Like, for instance, what is happening? The same playbook. It's just the same. For me, it's just the same playbook. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, why would I waste any one moment of my time trying to investigate what is going on? I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Look, Baba Ochi, I just want to make something clear for the sake of clarity and proper good order. I am born in the mind of the devil. You're in the belly of the devil. All what's happening to you there was created here. And I won't let no one tell me.
Right. No, you're right.
No, it's factual
it's
in history.
Factual. Yes.
Well, exactly. Well, I'm not saying it to you per se. I'm not saying it to you per se, Baba Ochi. I'm saying it for those out there who are in this dum-dum zone. Mm-hmm. And not to be derogatory, because it's not that they're dumb. They've been placed in the holding pen. They're in a holding pen of dum-dumbness. Mm-hmm. Look, they are playing the same game they've always played. Nothing has changed. Our sister came on this radio station and said it. It's the same playbook. And that inspired in me a moment of truth. It's absolutely right what she said. She just said what exactly no one else needs to say. She summed it all up. It's just the same playbook. Nothing has changed. The playbook is power and control. That's the reality of it. So I sent you that information on Tommy Robinson because the mere fact, what I couldn't understand after, you know what, Baba, let me just say this. I said this to you before. The young man who's apparently killed those three children, apparently, I'm even doubting whether that even happened. Baba Ochi, me and you share something here. One thing we do share, that we know 9/11 was an inside job. Do we agree on that?
It's firmly, I mean, it was very clear to me when the shit happened, okay? It was very clear to me. Right. So I've known this for over 20 years, yes.
Right. So 9/11 was an inside job. How does that translate? It translates that the people who run your country killed your people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's any make it any clearer. They organized it, planned it, and killed you who live there, the ones you're paying your taxes to. That's what they did. And they've been doing it a long time. Yeah. They've been doing it from the moment you got there. I don't know if that's clear to you, mm-hmm. or maybe that's not clear to some. Maybe some need reconvincing of it. Maybe they need to go and get some expert to redefine it in their mind. Or maybe they need to go and read a book or two to redefine it in their mind. Or maybe they just need to damn wake up. Maybe. So me and you share one thing in common, that we have some sort of intelligence. We're not going along to get along or running with the crowd or following the Pied Piper. No, we're using our own intellect to realize and opening our eyes to see that we're not zombies and we can see what's going on. And what's going on, these people are playing the same game. So coming back to Tommy Robinson, right? Mm-hmm. I sent you the information that he's being funded
by the Jews.
One of the Zionists in your country, America.
Right.
But I wonder, does he live in your country? The person I sent you the information, right. Is he living in your country?
Yes, he does. Yeah.
Right. He's an American Zionist. Now, mm-hmm. I'm trying to show you something, how these people are playing us like we are the fiddle. Okay? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to show you that there's an international game going on. It's not just the Jews. It's an unholy alliance. The unholy alliance is made up of the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. It's made up of the Catholic Church. And it's made up of their runners, who are the Jews. Mm-hmm. Zionists, not the Jews. They're the Zionists.
The Zionists.
That's their mm-hmm. runners. And they have created all this ideology. They created Mohammedism, they created Christianity and all these nonsense we got running around and fighting each other. And they've got us fighting each other for years, hundreds of years, killing off one another for their madness, which they created. Mm-hmm. Does that sound like I'm off my head, Baba Ochi?
Yeah.
Does that sound crazy to you?
No. It's on point. In fact,
but
so
some,
I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, Brother Paul. I'm going to read what you sent me. So people who are listening have a clear understanding of what you're talking about and who Tommy Robinson is. You know, I'm going to read this particularly because it's not that much.
And before you do that, Baba Ochi, when he sent his tweets on Elon Musk, the South African in America, his tweet show, when he sent that, right, he was in Cyprus, you know. And what does that remind you of? Doesn't that remind you of that Nati Netanyahu's son who was on the beach, right, mm-hmm. when Nati Netanyahu was bringing all the people back to fight his nonsense war, when his own son was on the beach?
Right.
Am I making it up?
Yes.
See how these people are playing us like we're the damn fiddle, and we won't wake up because we're following WhatsApp and shouting from our sofas. Can't get off our sofas because our asses are too fat. I don't want to go on. Thank you.
Brother Paul. <You're> right. Tommy Robinson unveiling the Zionist connections. August 13, 2024, Tommy Robinson, a figure often associated with the far right in the UK, is best known for founding the English Defence League, the EDL. Robinson's ascent is intrinsically connected to his affiliations with extremist Zionist elements and the influential international actors. These associations are, in a significant part, a manifestation of his pervasive Islamophobia. Anti-Muslim riots have spread across the UK in recent weeks and they're going to be examined what lies beneath them, behind them. We look at who has funded and supported the chief instigator, Stephen Lennon, who goes by the pseudonym Tommy Robinson. Okay, that's who Tommy Robinson really is, huh? Okay. We reveal how Zionists have been involved in Robinson's career since its beginning. Later in the program, we look at British intelligence and Zionist attempts to divert attention from Zionist role in riots. Robert J. Shulman, Robert J. Shulman, born in 1946, is an American businessman, electrical engineer, and philanthropist. He is the founder and former chair and CCO, the chief cultural officer of Cognet is provider of machine versions of systems, sensors, and industrial ID readers used in automated manufacturing. Shulman holds a degree from Northeastern University as well as a degree and a PhD from MIT. In August 2018, it was revealed by the Times that Shulman had been providing finances to the British far-right activist Tommy Robinson by helping to pay his five-figure salary, although at the time of this writing, the arrangement has ended. But this man has done the damage. So that's who we're talking about, Tommy Robinson, you know, who, So give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. If you got something to say, for those who are on the queue already, hit star twice and we'll have some conversation. You know, you have 15 good minutes. Yeah. I tell you, you know, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating because it should be very easy. But one thing that makes it very and extremely difficult is we're dealing with our minds. It should be plain to see, physically see. You know, the information has been there. But yet, many of us don't want to deal with it. We'd rather play blind, deaf, and dumb. That's just like Brother Paul said, the dumb dumb, you know. I mean, I remember saying that, you know, that many times that we don't want to know. You know, because by knowing, what I try to do this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is try to put something on your mind so you know. But by knowing, your behavior has to change. Your attitude has to change. Your outlook has to change. And so a lot of times people don't want to know. I never forget in discussion some years ago, this lady said, "No, I don't want you to say nothing to me because I don't you trying to change my mind." I don't want to hear it. So apparently to her, I'm thinking right and my mind's made up. And she's also the one that told me, she said, there should be more white men and black women and vice versa, you know, having kids. And so everybody looks, you know, high yellow on the planet. And, you know, I'll tell you, you look at the commercials, you look at a lot of programs, and it's what you see, you know. And so even though theoretically, because our genes are dominant, you get dominant. Their genes are recessive. This is not Brother Oshi making this up. The science has proven it. So their genes are recessive. So dominant, recessive, you get dominant. Recessive, recessive, you get recessive. And so the fact that an African and a Caucasian or European or Yorugu have a child. The child. Now, I know and you know, I've seen Caucasians and us have children. And because of the sister or the brother who has chosen Caucasian, they had a lot of Caucasian in them. You know, and so it's just like what Argentina talked about doing in terms of birthing the African out of Argentina. Aside from killing them, aside from eliminating them, they chose also to birth them out. So I'm a Caucasian Argentinian and I have sex with an African. That child cannot have sex with an African. You can only have sex with another Yorugu, and so forth and so on. So we can get rid of that element. But it's the same thing that Francis Cress Welsing realized when the Caucasian realized that it's genetic. For the Caucasian, it is his genetic survival. Because the African, that's why many have said that they hate the dark-skinned African because they know they can eliminate them through birthing. Yeah, give us a call at 215-490-9832. We have some people on the line. Yeah. Brother Irv.
Brother Oshi,
you're right on point with what you're saying. But, you know, I've learned something every time I listen to the show. I know there are two ways to get rid of the African out of your culture or whatever. You can kill them or you can birth them out. And you're absolutely correct.
Yes.
You can, if you do, two people have birth babies with less melanin, it becomes less and less over generations.
Right.
And then it starts to look. But a lady said something the other day, Bob Osha, you may not have heard this. She said if television was being true in the United States, the majority of people you should see on TV should be Asian. Mm. Because there are more Asians in the world than white people.
Yeah.
So why do you see so many white people on television as opposed to Asian? Because white people own the TV. Mm-hmm. The other lady said something that was so profound to me, Baba Ocean. And I gave it some thought, and I don't know if I'm thinking correctly, but you tell me if I'm not. She said, white people have the option not to like you as an American African, but you don't have the option not to like white people. Think about that for a second.
I don't have to. I don't need a second. I don't need a second. It's definitely true. Because they set the parameters. They have established them, you know? And so in order for you as an African in this Eurocentric dominated world, you got to capitulate. Mm-hmm. You got to like them. Now, no, they don't have to like you. In fact, they don't like you, you know? They don't. Wow. And they don't give a damn about you. They don't care, you know? But one thing's for sure, you are not going to go off somewhere doing what I'm talking about to compete with them or to put them in a precarious position or a second class position in terms of the 'cause see, they have no resources, but they've created the ability to extract them from everywhere else that does and to basically manipulate and to control them and to make them their own. See? So, yeah, you're right. No.
Wow. No, wow, that's, and Brother Paul says some very profound, I don't think he even realizes, and so does Brother Jay and all the callers on the show, but he said that the same playbook is being used, and what's happening, Baba, I was having this discussion before the show with someone else, the playbook is outdated. The playbook cannot be updated because the whole system has to be taken down. In other words, you can't put a old operating system onto Microsoft 10. You can't because you have to get rid of the whole computer and start over and get another. And so that's what's happening with Urugu because of the internet. The internet brings things in real time. Before things happened to Patrice Lumumba, we didn't hear about it months, maybe
years.
Longer than that.
Yeah.
Years.
Yeah.
But now, something happens in Burkina Faso, I hear about it instantly on my phone.
Right.
In this handheld computer that I have.
Right.
Because now, and let's be clear, I don't believe everything I see on the computer because most people will, you say, Satchel Paige, struck some people out. Well, let me look at, ask Google. Did you ask more than one source or did you ask one source? You went to one source and you, that's it, Google said it, it's true. And remember, Baba Oshie, when we were younger, we would look at TV, and everything on TV was true.
Right.
Everything. If it was on TV, it was true, man.
Yep.
I mean,
you saw it, didn't you?
Real, bro.
Yeah, you saw it.
You didn't see it? And it's the same way with the internet. If I Google it, you can't push back on it. I Googled it, man. Google ain't right. Wikipedia, you add, Wikipedia ain't right. But you don't question it because someone else creates your reality. And you say it all the time on this show. Whoever creates your reality and makes you believe that you did it has the power.
That's right.
That is the
you.
Definition of power.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but that's the definition of power. Hmm. My reality, like the little girl said you played, Bob Oshie, I don't have to wake up and put makeup on. Huh? I don't have to wake up and put white folk hair on my head. Mm-hmm. Huh? It grows out my head. Mm-hmm. Who said your hair was beautiful? But by the same token, who told the American Africans that their lips and their hair was ugly? Mm-hmm. I love nappy hair. I love it. the nappier, the happier I am. So no, Baba Oshi, we are in a place right now where it's very important. Like they say, this election, so every election is important. So right now, the American African, it's very important for you to wake up, smack, put some wood on your face, and understand that we're in a time right now where if we don't move towards our sovereignty, move towards our self-determination, move towards our liberation, we may not have a chance to do this for another 100, 200 years.
Or we may not be no more, you know?
We may not be anymore because they're trying to get rid of us.
Right.
They're trying to destroy. You're in the way of my domination. Because now this internet is the trump card.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't tell me anything anymore, Baba Oshi.
Right.
You can't. I listen to Paul, and I research what Paul says. I listen to Jay. I research it. Before I open my mouth and push back on anything that someone says, Ralph, or anyone on this, Brother Marcus, before I push back on anything they say, I do my little homework. I try to research from as many sources as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's available. Before, it wasn't. I had to take your word for it. You sound good. Mm-hmm. I want it to be right, but I got to make sure before I pass this on to my children. And that's why you have children killing children, because these racist rugus in this country are teaching their children to do what they didn't have the heart to do, or what they did, but they didn't do it as physical. You know, because you say it's the mind.
It's the mind.
It's the mind. Like, AJ said it. We're not going to rehabilitate this kid. Maybe you will and maybe you won't. That's neither here nor there, but what we're not going to do, we're not going to lower ourselves to act like a Rugu. We're not going to lower ourselves to be as demonic as a Rugu is. And we're not going to mislead people into believing that somebody's coming to save you. You saving your day. Everything you, God gave you everything you need
to save
to get what you need to be.
Yep.
So stop waiting for somebody. You don't need no pastor to tell you, no, God talked to me last night. Why did you put us on a party line? Why did you get, blend me in so I can live?
I need to make a mass broadcast. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that we fail to understand, you know, and we use the word power. And I know that we have talked about power being the ability, you know, power being money, because you got money, you have power. Power being information and education, and power being all of these things. Power is prayer, you know, all this stuff. No, power is none of those things. None of them. Mm-hmm. Wade Nobles, I feel, had the most definitive definition of power. Power being the ability to define reality and then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Europeans define reality. When they came out of that dark age, that medieval age, and went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of, they defined reality. And they said, this is the reality. And if you don't bow down and accept this definition and accept this reality as if it's your own, I'm going to kill you. That's all there's to it. They define reality. And we have accepted as if it's our own. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in Europeans, in Urugu's reality? First, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, justifying our captivity, justifying our colonization, justifying our enslavement. Now, who are we today? We're the thugs, the drug addicts, the drug dealers, no fit fathers, no fit mothers. That's who we are today. You know, let me see. You a caller?
Excellent.
Go ahead.
Hey, Earl.
Go ahead.
Irv, how are you feeling today, my brother? Because I witnessed something last night that I know has you pretty brokenhearted. It's only the first game. But I thought about you.
Yeah, I called him last night. Jay, I called him.
Toe on the line.
I called him and consoled him last night.
Irv is heartbroken.
Yeah.
Baba Oshi called me as soon as the game went off. I'm sitting here looking at it, and I look at the game purely as entertainment.
I told Irv, I said the boy's feet was too big.
I had money on the game, so I have to watch it from a little different perspective. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, I felt bad for you because I thought we was going in overtime.
Yeah.
Or it seemed like the coach was really gonna break your heart and go for the win.
Yeah.
So,
He was going for the win,
which I respect.
Yeah.
I gotta give him his respect. But Mahone and Jackson had already made me my money, so I was just there for the enjoyment at that stage of the game. But the thing is, it's the first game of the season, Irv. I think Baltimore is looking decent. I'm disappointed in the defense a little bit.
No, Baltimore's gonna be fine.
We gonna move forward, yeah. And they can't be as bad as the Jets. So
hey, man,
got to keep my mouth shut. We got trash in New York.
Yeah, don't be maligning my Jets, man. Okay, don't be doing
that.
The Jets, you know,
Baba, the Jets are trash. You know what I mean?
I call it as a man.
Huh?
If Rodgers can stay healthy and the running game they got and the defense that they have, the Jets will be competitive. And that's the end of that. So the time is up. All right, Jay.
All right, have a good one, brother.
All right, brother. Yes, peace. Have a good weekend, man.
Go get that in. Go ahead, brother.
All right, have a good weekend, brother Irv. Appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir.
Brother Paul, have a good weekend, man. And Baba, that's right, my brother in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Baba, have a good weekend. And all those who listened and called in, appreciate you. Have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend. Make it be a safe weekend. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Have a good weekend. Shem Hotep. That means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, Abibi Fahodie. You have a good and safe weekend, family. Peace.